Hey everyone, calling all you mobile growth experts to join our virtual conference on October 28th at 9 a.m. PST. Get up to speed on how the world's best mobile marketers from Twitch, Gameloft, and SocialPoint are growing their apps and games. Simply head to stormhaven.com, hit the ASO conference link at the header of the website to get your free ticket. Space is limited. Hurry up. Hope to see you there.
For us, PR from the very beginning was a very important piece in growing the user base because people typically don't search for another keyboard. You have yours, and usually users don't think, oh, let me change my keyboard. No, you use it. And most people don't think about, is it good or bad? It's just there. So it's about educating people. And here, obviously, using the press with the big reach is a very powerful tool in that.
Welcome to Mobile Growth and Pancakes, a podcast by Stormhaven. We break down how and why mobile apps grow. In each episode, we invite a mobile growth expert onto the show to break down a specific mobile growth strategy, how it worked, why it worked, and what they would do differently. I'm your host, Esther Schatz.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for joining Mobile Growth and Pancakes. I'm your host, Jonathan Fishman. I'm VP Marketing here at Stormhaven. I'm actually stepping in to replace Esther, your normal host, which is on, she's on maternity leave. So we'll wish her the best of times with her new baby. So we have her today, David Ebriel. He's the CEO and co-founder of Typewise. David, do you want to introduce yourself?
Absolutely. Glad to be here. Hi, everyone. I'm one of the two founders of Typewise. We basically build a smartphone keyboard that helps you type more conveniently with fewer typos, more speed, and more fun on your iOS and Android smartphone.
Awesome. How long does the company exist?
So we've been full-time on this for exactly 2 years. We started in October 2019, just when we moved places and my wife was about to have our second child. The idea has been around for more time. Yeah. So my co-founder, Janice, he basically approached me one day. We had worked together previously on another, we had an agency together, that we did on the side, hence our proximity to marketing, from the first day. And, he was always optimizing his productivity across his phone and laptop. And I think one day his attention turned towards keyboards and he wasn't happy with what was out there and he created his own solution. And I was sold on, the story that the keyboard we used was created for typewriters in the 19th century, but we're now in the 21st century and we're using a small phone, not a typewriter anymore. And why are we using the same thing that was never created for like two thumb typing on a phone? And it affects billions of people every day, like 80 times per day. So that seems to be like a pretty big opportunity. Of course, it's also hard because Apple and Google, they have their own keyboards and they pre-install it on their phones. So you kind of have to swim against the stream. And there's, with every change, there's a bit of relearning attached to that. So we can also maybe talk about that later. But basically, this is what we've been doing. The company is much more than like a keyboard app. We don't have to go into detail here because it's maybe not so much related to the marketing, but we built this text prediction AI technology with top people here in Zurich. And so it's the keyboard app is like the tip of the iceberg, but there's a much bigger AI platform that we're building below that. But maybe that's the topic of another day. Just wanted to mention it.
Sure. It sounds exciting and a very competitive space. I mean, there's a ton of keyboards out there. I mean, every one of these have their different angle. There's like the Grammarly keyboard and so on. Who you guys compete with? Who do you define as your competitors?
Yeah, I mean, on the app side, there are basically two types of competitors. There's of course there's Apple and Google and Microsoft SwiftKey, which dominate the market of all new phones. I think most other alternative keyboards have disappeared. There were some things like TouchPal, and it's even an Israeli company called AI Type, who were then banned because of a scandal because they stole millions of dollars from people. So you have to be careful with which keyboard you use. But most of them, they have kind of gone, and all the smartphone like manufacturers, they basically either go with the Gboard for the Android or SwiftKey, and Apple anyway uses their own. And so we have to convince users to try something else. And now here comes the second type of competitor is, well, who else do they try? And there are obviously a few. There is, as you mentioned, there's Grammarly, although they have a bit of different focus. So there are maybe a handful if you look at those top 10 Android keyboards. But we're typically often, not all, we haven't managed to be really a standard like a Gboard yet, but in many of those lists, we're also mentioned. So it's not that there are hundreds of keyboards and it's super competitive, but there's maybe three main ones, and then there's maybe 5 to 10 secondary ones. The hard thing is, if you Google in the App Store for keyboards, you will find thousands, because they're, you know, like an orange keyboard or a pink keyboard or the kitty catty keyboard, which are not really keyboards that are any way good to type, but they have another theme, or it's just a very competitive keyword, and that makes it hard to just put your app on the app stores. You will not get any traction. So also around the topic of today, as I understood, for us, PR from the very beginning was a very important piece in growing the user base, because people typically don't search for another keyboard. You have yours, and usually users don't think, oh, let me change my keyboard. No, you use it. And most people don't think about, is it good or bad? It's just there. And so it's not like an active search that we see millions of people searching for alternative keyboards. So it's about educating people. And here, obviously, using the press with a big reach is a very powerful tool in that.
Yeah, it's a really good point. I mean, the kind of marketing challenge that you guys have is pretty different than a lot of other folks, because you're really trying to change something that is native to the OS most of the time. As you said, a lot of people don't really actively search for a keyboard. Something has to trigger them to do that. And of course, and if you look at the App Store and Google Play search, it's extremely competitive. Like, there's a ton of keyboards. I agree with you. There's also, I think the market is pretty educated by now that you have to be very careful with before you install a keyboard app, because they might steal your data. I mean, they actually know everything that you type, which is, it freaks me out, but there's a lot of trust issues there that adds to the marketing challenge. So I think that puts you in a very interesting place to talk and educate the audience about marketing in the app stores. So let's, so you said that you had a good experience with PR. When did you start? I mean, was it right when you started? You thought that PR is a massive growth channel that you need to invest in?
So my co-founder, in his previous, one of his previous careers, he worked as a IT journalist. So I think it somehow came a bit natural to us as a team to use PR. We used it the first time when we did our initial crowdfunding on Kickstarter. And that's when we got our first TechCrunch article. And I think we reached out, like, I think he did it even back then. And I think he reached out to like 50 or 100 journalists that he just found that cover this type of thing. So I think we did many things right from the start. But also during that crowdfunding, we also saw the second learning is that in the end, the more people you reach, the better. So you can have a TechCrunch article, but if not many, you know, if it's somehow nested in a subtopic and only a few hundred people see it, we didn't see a lot of impact in that in the crowdfunding. And then I don't know how we didn't contact them, but it was a national newspaper in Switzerland that somehow covered it just in their digital edition. Mm-hmm. But they have a lot of traffic and it's a lot of engagement they have. Also a lot of haters, but fine, because I think the more the merrier. And then it was just like, you know, contributions to that crowdfunding started coming in every 2 minutes. So that really basically helped us to cross the line, and it was all then successful back then. And so we, from the very beginning, we saw, hey, that's actually quite interesting. How we get suddenly a lot of people with one article. And we've then built that in into our, let's say, launch strategies since that experience.
And did you have a dedicated, I mean, when you, did you raise money only through that crowdfunding campaign?
No, that was very small. That was like 15K from 800 people. That was really just a start point. We still took a while to go full time. We then raised some funds in total, almost $3 million by now. We did another crowdfunding now, but this time an equity crowdfunding. So it's very different. Here, we also again had a PR article, and one business angel saw that article. He posted on it on LinkedIn. I got in touch with him, and then he invested afterwards. So again, awesome. It shows how PR, it's very different. I think here was more selective PR in the right media that... But it can also work with investors. So I think it has been a powerful tool.
Awesome. So when you launched, I mean, I think every app or even mobile game, when they launch, they have to start building their ammunition for that launch. And most apps and most games today rely on a very large UA budget that they would deploy probably on Facebook and Google and so on. So I think that you guys going towards the PR route is pretty interesting. Because a lot of people that I spoke with, or their experience with PR isn't that good. I mean, they say that one of two things usually happen. One of them is what you said. You do all this work, you reach out to reporters, and finally you get success, and an article was written and mentioned your app. But only a few hundred people saw it because it was nested in multiple layers within TechCrunch, and it wasn't that visible. And the second thing that happened is that you do get a huge boost in visibility, but not a lot of people actually install the app because the intent and the quality of these impressions isn't that good. Was that something that you saw, like in terms of like a huge boost in people visiting your app store page, but not a lot of them actually installing?
I saw the first one of your points a lot, the majority. I mean, we got maybe over the past 3 months, we got 60 articles, including one on Mashable, but none of them was like, oh, wow, that was such a big thing. It was just there. And I think it's good because it helps us also with PageRank and with the backlinks, and it has a long tail of maybe visitors. So it's definitely worth it, but I agree, and that's an issue. And I think in general, probably the effect of written PR has declined. So I think looking maybe at YouTube as a PR channel, not paid, but getting into those, like the celebrities, and I mean on the tech side now for us, right? But depending on your app, you could maybe be lifestyle, or I mean, gaming anyway is a huge. Also, you could see if you get on Steam, maybe somebody who will cover you. Usually, they always ask for money. So there, it's very hard. Is it to turn it from a paid acquisition into a news story that they want to cover? I think it's very hard, but sometimes it does work. But anyway, so YouTube is, I think that works very well. There you obviously see the quality of installs is usually not necessarily so great. But that could also be then a geographic thing, because many of those big ones maybe have global reach and you have a lot of Indian installs, and maybe then you don't support their language. Or maybe the pricing, like the business model is not made for such a country. When you have to pay, and then people just uninstall. For us, though, we have seen for the articles that did work, actually, the quality of installs was very good. Also, the conversion rate went up, like all the indicators went up for that cohort.
Did you try to measure it in a very granular way, like in App Store Connect and so on?
Yeah, of course, but it's very hard because you don't usually, publishers, they don't put like an attribution link. Mm-hmm. And then often they maybe don't even click on the link, but they read it on the computer. They take their phone and search for your app. So you have a break in the acquisition flow. Mm-hmm. But you see on the day, you have a huge spike, and then you see maybe for that weekly cohort, the numbers are just much better. So it's clear that spike came from organic, and then you can take out the paid and only look at the organic. So I think people that read, at least in our case, people that read about the product, they're better informed when they download it. So then the behavior is much better because our product needs a bit of knowledge. So it's because there is this learning curve. And I think if you know what to expect, and then you know why you're doing this learning curve, and then you're obviously much more willing to maybe stick with it for a week. Whereas if you just see an ad and you click on it, you download it, you have no clue what this is. And then you say, oh, no, now I need to learn something. No, thanks. I don't have time for this.
Yeah, I think you touched a really important point, which is context. Today, with iOS 15 and iOS 14.5 and the shift towards privacy, a privacy-first world, there's a huge importance on context and contextual advertising and marketing to reach your quality users. And what you identify there is when somebody is educated or more educated about your product and they read about it and... you know, the very best thing that can happen is that they read about it from kind of influencer or somebody that they trust that explained this is a game changer for how you type, for example, there's a much better chance that person would become a quality user. And then identifying that this funnel exists and creating more of that. So that's a really interesting view in PR. It's not just getting some mention in just any article. It's educating the users and then creating this funnel. So that's really interesting. Mm. The second thing that you mentioned is around measurement. I mean, it's I heard that a lot. It's almost impossible to measure it directly because I think that goes into the fact that the industry in itself was kind of addicted to direct response attribution up until now. And it's just not how marketing works most of the time. It's not how you or I buy or install apps. Things happen across multiple devices. Sometimes you read something on one device, search on the App Store on a second device. It's just impossible to measure it through direct response. But seeing that spike in branded search, for example, could really show you the impact of that. Mm. So what happened there? I mean, once you actually started getting traction with PR, you saw your user base basically explode. Well, what was the results?
Yeah, I mean, we've had a couple of spikes since the launch in December 2019, which was one of maybe our biggest PR successes so far, where we've maybe generated almost like, it was like maybe 50,000 downloads, mm-hmm. which also shows you like getting 10 million downloads from a PR campaign is probably impossible. Even getting 1 million downloads from a PR campaign, I think maybe, but then this needs to be a blaster campaign, you know, like maybe Clubhouse or something, but you need to be maybe in all the big newspapers in the US, right? Otherwise, even like a Wired article we had, that was one we had once in for CES. We were mentioned twice and that gives you maybe 10,000 downloads. So that's maybe already like a very good article. And then maybe for a launch, you get maybe five of those, right? So that's maybe like the range that in our experience seems feasible. Now we're a Swiss company that gives us maybe, there are not that many, you know, Swiss app makers that are successful internationally. So maybe we have a good standing here. It's a bit easier for us here to get into the national news. although it's also hard, yeah, because usually covering apps is not so interesting. So we usually combine it now with the story. I mean, first it was, this is a new app. So that was interesting. And then it was, we then had the story around like a fundraise. Then we were in a TV show here. So that gave us another coverage. Then we launched a new version. So we kind of made a big claim and said, oh, our AI is better than like Google. So then obviously they like to mention this again. So you have some news that you can package, but I think it's hard. And maybe as a US-based company, you have a bigger market, but also there's more competition within that market. I don't know. I think that's just how it is. So I think it cannot be your only pillar. I mean, that's clear. It gives you some spikes. And now what we try to do, we have a dedicated person since June who's very experienced in this field. He basically did this successfully for a exited unicorn before. So we obviously hope that he can kind of repeat that success. But again, it's a slow effort, and you have to experiment a lot which messages work and which don't. What is we also do is around trade conferences where we get maybe a booth or something. We then try to make a PR effort out of it. But also, yeah, do you have something like, do you have some new cool feature, and can you sell that feature from a storytelling point of view that it's so, like, does it sound so interesting enough for the press to cover it?
Sure. So let's dive a bit deeper into the operational side. I mean, there's a lot of folks that are, you know, contemplating between hiring a PR agency. I know that you had experience with one, or doing this in-house. And you just started mentioning basically the challenge of having a good story for the press to tell, because nobody's going to cover you if you just say, hey, I'm a new app. There's millions of new apps. Let's start with the agency. What was your experience there?
I mean, what do you need to do PR? I think you need a story, like the idea of the story. I mean, and then you need to write the story, which is a press release, which is like a pitch email. And then you need a list of people you can reach out to with an email address, and you should know what are these people writing about typically. If you have pre-existing relations, maybe that's nice because they're more likely to open your email. Somebody told me that like a tech reporter gets 500 emails per day. So if they don't reply to you, then it's not because they may not like your story. They probably just haven't seen it even. So how do you get, I think that's the hard, like how do you get people to open and actually read your email and get back to you? And then you need to follow up and have a planning around, okay, if that guy doesn't reply from TechCrunch, just maybe another person I can reach out to. How many people should I reach out to at the same time? And there's a bit of know-how, what is good practice and bad practice, but I think that's not rocket science. And there's a question, which of these things do you want to do yourself? And which of these things would an agency cover for you? And apparently, I mean, I spoke to an agency once here in Europe, and they were very open. And I think the person mentioned in the US, this like a one day per, what was it, like a one day per week support would cost us $5,000 per month or something. And in Europe, it's maybe only €3,000. That's what they kind of put out there. And it was basically, well, you don't need that. Unless you're maybe, you know, let's say you're like a B2B SaaS startup and you have no marketing guy in your team that can do that, and you're very sales focused, for example, and then you really need someone who does that public communication, you really don't have anyone who can do it, maybe then you can go that way. At least at the beginning. But I think if you're a consumer app, you anyway need a, you need to tell a story. And
how do you find a good story to tell reporters? I mean, what was your process like? Because I think a lot of it is in the story. Even if they open your email, you have to have a story to tell. Yeah.
I think, I mean, it needs to be true. So when we say our AI outperforms Google, well, on we do have benchmarks which we do with people from the university, we cannot say all our algorithms outperform Google, but that specific one, I think it's broad enough to be noteworthy, which concerns the autocorrection. We're better, and so I think it's a fair enough statement to make, and then. We also test it sometimes. So we put the story always in the head, like in the subject line, like Swiss AI startup beats Google, or new, you know, and then you kind of test it. We also sometimes just put one word in the subject line, for example, keyboard or new, to make it as unmarketing-ish as possible. And actually open rates are quite good with those subject lines. Also if it looks like it's not sent from a mass, email account. Yeah,
for sure. No, I think it's really interesting. Yeah. So I actually worked with researchers in universities to try to benchmark it like independently, the algorithm. What did you find there? What kind of algorithm it is?
Yeah, I mean, it's like we looked at our autocorrection like algorithm that basically, when you as you type makes corrections to it, and then you have to see how many typos do you correct, but also how many non-typos get accidentally corrected, so in something else which it shouldn't, and then you kind of have to weigh both percentages and kind of create some overall score, and there we come out the head.
Awesome. So it's really like finding your angle, that one thing you can do and try to create a story out of it, of in this case like a David versus Goliath story of how you guys manage to create something that's better than Google in that aspect, and how reporters basically They're always in the lookout for these kind of stories. One of our head of content was basically a reporter for like 15 years here in Tel Aviv. So it was really fascinating to hear from him the reporter angle, which is, listen, these folks are always in the lookout of really interesting stories. It's all about the story. You have a story that is noteworthy and gonna grab some eyeballs. They're going to be interested, but as an app marketer, you have to create it for them. They won't do it for you. So it's really cool what you did there with the algorithm.
Well, although it's hard, right? We run the privacy story multiple times, as you say. The keyboard sees everything that you type, and we don't, right? We are a fully private, privacy focused company. And product, and we tried multiple times with the Signal and WhatsApp and those people who covered that topic, we then sent them a pitch, and also explaining, like, we had written an entire blog article that got featured on Medium, and where we kind of outlined the whole history of all the scandals involving keyboards and how like hundreds of millions of people were affected, and how that's actually like a big thing when you think about it.
Yeah.
But nobody picked it up. And that's quite interesting. And I'm like, why? Like, I would like to hear from someone. Why didn't you, like, what was your rationale? Why didn't you think it's interesting?
Interesting.
But I don't know. I still don't know the answer. But it's just sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And it's not always, you know, there's not always like a clear rational explanation of why one thing worked and the other one didn't. No. So I think it's a lot about trying. So as with everything, I think maybe instead of running a lot of major campaigns only like twice a year, maybe run a lot of campaigns. And when you see maybe one works, you could build on that and make it maybe bigger. Maybe that's could be the answer to kind of how to get persistent coverage.
Yeah, it's not a one-time thing. You have to be like a repeatable process to actually get the long-term benefits of it and to not rely on these spikes so much. Mm. Cool. So we're about to run out of time, but do you have any tips for like aspiring marketers that want to dabble in PR? They have very little experience in doing that so far, so they're kind of on the fence between hiring an agency or starting doing it themselves. How do you just get started?
I mean, one founder asked me that question once here in Switzerland, and I think I had told him, well, you basically need a bit of content and then find someone who covered that content before in like a relevantly sized outlet and just approach the person. And so, I mean, they're like an
edu. You just reach him on LinkedIn? Out. Yeah.
Yeah, or like an email. I can use Rocket Reach, right, to get people's addresses through LinkedIn. And then I think he did it and they got published. So not about the company in the first place, but they got an article about their study. So they had run a study about like how do you use video for like job interviews and how that changed over the past 2 years. And they have a job interview platform. And they obviously then got mentioned also as a company as part of that. And it was, I think, one email that they had to send.
Awesome.
So I think maybe that's how we get started. And if you don't get, usually we see response rates of maybe, that's a good question, 5% at least, maybe sometimes 10. And if you get like, if you send 100 emails and get nothing back, then maybe you have to change your story. Yeah. But you can also ask someone if you're really unsure, just ask someone, what do you think? Is this newsworthy? Mm-hmm.
I think that there's also, it's a good bet to use data, to create like a data-driven story, because reporters love that. They love stories with studies. You mentioned the study you did with algorithms. Your founder friend did the same thing. It's a good bet to start with that. If you're an app company and you really have something that can be data-driven, I mean,
you could also say this app, like my new game, has grown 10,000% in the past. Even if it's from one user to like 100, I think even just that number might. Or whatever. Or, you know, I see double the engagement than some other game, like some popular game or. Yeah, I don't know. It can also be a bit. Or maybe you have a personal, you know, like a very interesting, like we had one guy, he had arthritis and he was one of our users. And he actually, I think by chance, we had a user interview with him. Mm-hmm. And he had mentioned that for him, the keyboard almost saved his life. And like how he couldn't use the phone otherwise without Typewise, and he wasn't able to then create a bank account, and he was like living on the streets, and then he found Typewise, and then everything changed for him. And I mean, it's true. Like we then wrote an article about him. He has like a picture with him, and we sent him a t-shirt and he's there. And we then reshared that story and did get picked up by, unfortunately not the, like we thought maybe in his home state that could become a story, but then it didn't, but some picked it up. So again, maybe there's some other angles that have nothing to do per se with the product, but it's more of like a human story. I think once you start thinking about it, it becomes very broad. The question is it going to pay off at the end? Does the time you put in to that effort result in downloads and in revenue ultimately? So
what's your conclusion so far after been doing this for a couple of years? Is it worth it?
As I said, I mean, I think we've had some key spikes in the product. We had an investor join us directly through that article. And I think in general, the articles Yeah, they also keep the conversation going about the company. Mm-hmm. Do you need it? I think it's not going to be the ultimate driver of success unless you're super lucky and somehow it creates a spiral effect. But I think usually it kind of goes down again. So I think it's not, it cannot be your major pillar of driving user acquisition. I think that doesn't work. I think you need some other, let's say pillars in, you know, that support your strategy, but it's definitely like one of it. And it's a bit broader than just downloads.
Yeah. Got it. So yeah, you can't really expect like, you know, an overnight success. I don't know if you remember FaceTime. You remember that app? So it got like hundreds of millions of installs. And it was caught by a lot of publications. It was an app that made you look young or old, depends on what you do.
And yeah.
A lot of different things, or how you look like as a woman, or if you're a woman, how you look like as a man. And they got picked up by... I analyzed it back then. It was like thousands of publications around the world. Celebrities picked it up and it created this spiral effect that was out of control, but it led to hundreds of millions of installs. But you can't really plan for that. And you can't start doing PR and building your processes hoping that that would happen, because it would probably shift your focus from other efforts that you need to be investing in.
Yeah, I think that's a lucky shot, but I think it's worth it spending a bit of time and budget on that one. Mm-hmm. Because if it does happen, I think then you're done.
Yeah, definitely. Cool. So, David, we're out of time, but I do have one last question that I have to ask you that we ask all of our guests. What's your favorite flavor of pancake? And which kind of pancakes do folks eat in Switzerland?
Yeah. So we like to do ricotta pancakes.
Cool.
Yeah. So you can just mix that in and they become quite fluffy.
Awesome.
But then I think standard bacon and maple syrup, I think that's fine.
Yeah. Bacon and maple syrup. That's what I do. Yeah.
that's always tasty.
Awesome. Cool. So thank you very much for joining us today. And that's it for today, folks. Tune in for the next episode. It's with a really exciting guest. I can't share the name just yet, but waiting, really excited for that interview. So thanks, David.
No, thank you. Thanks for having me. And of course, you know, try Typewise. You find it in the app stores. It's free to download.
For sure. Go download Typewise. Thanks. Thank you.
And that was Mobile Growth in Pancakes. To find out more about StoreMaven and how we can improve App Store performance, visit storemaven.com. And then make sure to search for Mobile Growth in Pancakes in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts, or anywhere else podcasts are found, and click subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. On behalf of the team here at StoreMaven, thanks for listening.